WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
We've all heard plenty of political analysis of last week's debate. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has a different perspective on the debate and President Obama's surprisingly weak performance.
When you think how carefully staged and planned the debates are, it's remarkable how often candidates manage to screw them up. Sometimes they're undone by a simple gaffe or an ill-conceived bit of stagecraft, like Gerald Ford's slip-up about Soviet domination of Eastern Europe in 1976 or Al Gore's histrionic sighing in 2000. Sometimes it's just a candidate having a bad day, like Ronald Reagan's woolly ramblings in the first debate with Walter Mondale in 1984. But Obama's flop was more puzzling than those. People were quick to spot all his lost opportunities. Twitter recorded 10.3 million tweets over the 90 minutes of the debate, and my guess is that 500,000 of those were suggestions for riposts and zingers that Obama ought to have used. But there was no one moment when the debate went off the rails, which is why even the Saturday Night Live writers said they had trouble turning it into a sketch. You could hear the bewilderment in the multitude of explanations and excuses people offered for Obama's performance. He's worn down by the job, he's not used to being challenged anymore, he didn't expect Romney to be so ready to rumble. It was the Denver altitude, he didn't want to be seen as an angry black man, it was a Zen thing. I have no idea what the man was thinking, but one thing that struck me about 5 minutes in is that he didn't seem to know which TV talk show he was showing up for. Like the other spectacles of modern public life, the televised debate restages a supposedly traditional ritual as a kind of TV format. There's this minimal basic setup with the candidates and lecterns and a moderator or panel. And after the very first Kennedy-Nixon debate, there has to be a studio audience, even if they're told to keep silent. As with any other talk show, we need a surrogate so we can imagine how the candidates' words are landing. But beyond that, a debate can play out in a lot of ways. There are those WrestleMania smackdowns like some of this year's Republican primary debates, where the audiences were encouraged to jeer and cheer, and the candidates were attacking the moderators and each other directly. You think of Gingrich saying to Romney, "Can we drop a little bit of the pious baloney?" Or Romney offering to bet Rick Perry $10,000 about his position on the individual mandate. But those candidate-to-candidate exchanges are pretty unusual in the history of debates between the presidential and vice presidential nominees. True, they've provided us with some of the most memorable moments, like Lloyd Benson's "You're no Jack Kennedy" line to Dan Quayle in 1988. But actually, that was one of only two things that Benson said directly to Quayle in the course of that debate. In fact, from the first Kennedy-Nixon debate up through the debates in recent elections, the candidates have rarely addressed each other more than a couple of times in all. The overwhelming number of remarks are addressed to the moderator or panelist with an occasional shout-out to the audience at home. So the real outlier in this last debate was Romney. He addressed the president directly 37 times as Mr. President or just as you. That was almost twice as often as he referred to him in the third person. And it was dramatically different from Obama, who referred to Romney in the third person 50 times and addressed him directly only 6. It was as if Romney had shown up armed for a cable news face-off while the president was prepared for an episode of Meet the Press. Obama spoke with the slightly hesitant style he uses when he wants to convey thoughtfulness to an interviewer, drawing out words like and but, and pausing briefly between word groups, as if he were carefully composing each sentence on the spot. Whereas, apart from a few strategically placed false starts, Romney didn't really try to dispel the impression that he was offering up a prepared pitch. Now, Obama may very well have been just off his game, but the strategy of avoiding direct confrontation was clearly decided in advance. And it probably wouldn't have been so disastrous for Obama if Romney hadn't been hammering on him with all those second-person "you this and you that." All of a sudden, the style that must have seemed deliberative in rehearsal came off as evasive, timid, and peckish. The big reason why Romney could get away with addressing his answers to Obama rather than the moderator Jim Lehrer is that the questions themselves were so vague and open-ended, unlike the tough and specific interrogatories that panelists asked in the debates of earlier eras. It put me in mind of a certain kind of celebrity interview, You, Mitt Romney, government, regulation, help me with this. The air may have been thick with facts and factoids, but the only specific figure that Lyra mentioned was in Your 2 minutes are up. Things will be different on October 16th when the candidates are talking directly to audience members in the town meeting setting. Obama doesn't get professorial when he's one-on-one with members of the public, and in that setting, the burden will be on Romney to make personal contact. The aggressive sallies that were effective in the first debate are apt to make him sound like a QVC pitchman when you hear them spoken to an ordinary citizen. But they'll probably both do just fine. And anyway, I like to think that in the end, none of these things should matter. This is a political debate, after all, not Battle of the Network Stars. But who am I kidding?
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at the University of California at Berkeley School of Information and author of the book Ascent of the A-Word.